day, everyone gathered for worship, just as the law had said they must. The people confess their sins. Chapter 9. On the 24th day of the 7th month, the people of Israel went without eating, and they dressed in sackcloth and threw dirt on their heads to show their sorrow. They refused to let foreigners join them, as they met to confess their sins and the sins of their ancestors. For 3 hours they stood and listened to the law of the Lord their God, and then for the next 3 hours they confessed their sins and worshiped the Lord. Jeshua, Bani, Kadmiel, Shebaniah, Bani, Sherebiah, Bani, and Kenani stood on the special platform for the Levites and prayed aloud to the Lord their God. Then the Levites Jeshua, Kadmiel, Bani, Hashabniah, Sherebiah, Hodiah, Shebaniah, and Pethahiah said, "Stand and shout praises to your Lord, the eternal God. Praise his wonderful name, though he is greater than words can express." The people pray. You alone are the Lord, creator of the heavens and all the stars, creator of the earth and those who live on it, creator of the ocean and all its creatures. You are the source of life, praised by the stars that fill the heavens. You are the Lord our God, the one who chose Abram. You brought him from Ur in Babylonia, and named him Abraham. Because he was faithful, you made an agreement to give his descendants the land of the Canaanites and Hittites, of the Amorites and Perizzites, and of the Jebusites and Girgashites. Now you have kept your promise, just as you always do. When our ancestors were in Egypt, you saw their suffering. When they were at the Red Sea, you heard their cry for help. You knew that the king of Egypt and his officials and his nation had mistreated your people. So you worked fearsome miracles against the Egyptians and earned a reputation that still remains. You divided the deep sea, and your people walked through on dry land. But you tossed their enemies in, and they sank down like a heavy stone. Each day you led your people with a thick cloud, and at night you showed the way with a flaming fire. At Sinai you came down from heaven, and you gave your people good laws and teachings that are fair and honest. You commanded them to respect your holy Sabbath, and you instructed your servant Moses to teach them your laws. When they were hungry, you sent bread from heaven. And when they were thirsty, you let water flow from a rock. Then you commanded them to capture the land that you had solemnly promised. Our stubborn ancestors refused to obey. They forgot about the miracles you had worked for them, and they were determined to return to Egypt and become slaves again. But our God, you are merciful and quick to forgive. You are loving, kind, and very patient. So you never turned away from them, not even when they made an idol shaped like a calf and insulted you by claiming, "This is the God who rescued us from Egypt." Because of your great mercy, you never abandoned them in the desert, and you always guided them with a cloud by day and a fire at night. Your gentle spirit instructed them, and you gave them manna to eat and water to drink. You took good care of them, and for 40 years they never lacked a thing. Their shoes didn't wear out, and their feet were never swollen. You let them conquer kings and take their land, including King Sihon of Heshbon and King Og of Bashan. You brought them into the land that you had promised their ancestors, and you blessed their nation with people that outnumbered the stars in the sky. Then their descendants conquered the land. You helped them defeat the kings and nations and treat their enemies however they wished. They captured strong cities and rich farmland. They took furnished houses as well as cisterns, vineyards, olive orchards, and numerous fruit trees. They ate till they were satisfied, and they celebrated your abundant blessings. In spite of this, they rebelled and disobeyed your laws. They killed your prophets, who warned them to turn back to you, and they cursed your name. So you handed them over to their enemies, who treated them terribly. But in their sufferings, they begged you to help. From heaven you listened to their prayers, and because of your great mercy, you sent leaders to rescue them. But when they were at peace, they would turn against you, and you would hand them over to their enemies. Then they would beg for help, and because you are merciful, you rescued them over and over again. You warned them to turn back and discover true life by obeying your laws. But they stubbornly refused and continued to sin. For years you were patient, and your spirit warned them with messages spoken by your prophets. Still they refused to listen, and you handed them over to their enemies. But you are merciful and kind, and so you never forgot them or let them be destroyed. Our God, you are powerful, fearsome, and faithful, always true to your word. So please keep in mind the terrible sufferings of our people, kings, leaders, priests, and prophets, from the time Assyria ruled until this very day. You have always been fair when you punished us for our sins. Our kings, leaders, and priests have never obeyed your commands or heeded your warnings. You blessed them with a kingdom and with an abundance of rich, fertile land, but they refused to worship you or turn from their evil. Now we are slaves in this fruitful land you gave to our ancestors. Its plentiful harvest is taken by kings you placed over us because of our sins. Our suffering is unbearable because they do as they wish to us and our livestock. The people make an agreement. And so, a firm agreement was made that had the official approval of the leaders, the Levites and priests. Chapter 10. As governor, I signed the agreement together with Zedekiah and the following priests: Seraiah, Azariah, Jeremiah, Pasher, Amariah, Malchijah, Hattush, Shebaniah, Malak, Harim, Meramoth, Obadiah, Daniel, Ginnathon, Barak, Meshullam, Abijah, Mijamin, Maaziah, Bilgai, and Shemaiah. The Levites who signed were Jeshua, son of Azaniah, Binui, from the clan of Henadad, Kadmiel, Shebaniah, Hodiah, Kelita, Pileah, Hanan, Micah, Rehob, Hashabiah, Zachar, Sherebiah, Shebaniah, Hodiah, Benai, and Benainu. The leaders who signed were Perosh, Pahath Moab, Elam, Zachu, Benai, Benai, Azgad, Bibai, Adonijah, Bigvai, Aden, Ater, Hezekiah, Azar, Hodiah, Hashem, Bizai, Harif, Anathoth, Nebai, Magpiash, Meshullam, Hezer, Meshezabel, Zadok, Jedua, Pelatiah, Hanan, Anaiah, Hoshea, Hananiah, Hashab, Halohesh, Pilha, Shobek, Rehum, Heshabna, Maaseiah, Ahiah, Hanan, Anan, Malak, Harim, and Baana. The Agreement. All of us, including priests, Levites, temple guards, singers, temple workers, and leaders, together with our wives and children, have separated ourselves from the foreigners in this land, and now enter into an agreement with a complete understanding of what we are doing. And so, we now place ourselves under the curse of the Lord our God, if we fail to obey his laws and teachings that were given to us by his servant Moses. We won't let our sons and daughters marry foreigners. We won't buy goods or grain on the Sabbath or on any other sacred day, not even from foreigners. Every 7 years we will let our fields rest, and we will cancel all debts. Once a year we will each donate a small amount of silver to the temple of our God. This is to pay for the sacred bread, as well as for the daily sacrifices and special sacrifices, such as those offered on the Sabbath and during the New Moon Festival and the other festivals. It will also pay for the sacrifices to forgive our sins and for all expenses connected with the worship of God in the temple. We have decided that the families of priests, Levites, and ordinary people will supply firewood for the temple each year so that sacrifices can be offered on the altar, just as the Lord our God has commanded. Each year we will bring to the temple the first part of our harvest of grain and fruit. We will bring our firstborn sons and the firstborn males of our herds and flocks and offer them to the priests who serve in the temple, because this is what is written in God's law. To the priests in the temple of our God, we will bring the bread dough from the first harvest, together with our best fruit, and an offering of new wine and olive oil. We will bring 10% of our grain harvest to those Levites who are responsible for collecting it in our towns. A priest from the family of Aaron must be there when we give this to the Levites. Then the Levites will put 1/10 of this part in the temple storeroom, which is also the place for the sacred objects used by the priests, the temple guards, and the singers. Levites and everyone else must bring their gifts of grain, wine, and olive oil to this room. We will not neglect the temple of our God. People Who Settled in Jerusalem. Chapter 11. The nation's leaders and their families settled in Jerusalem. But there was room for only 1 out of every 10 of the remaining families, and so they asked God to show them who would live there. Then everyone else asked God to bless those who were willing to live in Jerusalem. Some of the people of Israel, the priests, the Levites, the temple workers, and the descendants of Solomon's servants, lived on their own property in the towns of Judah. But the leaders of the province lived in Jerusalem with their families. The Judah Tribe. From the Judah tribe, 2 leaders settled in Jerusalem with their relatives. One of them was Athaiah, son of Azaiah. His ancestors were Zechariah, Amariah, Shephatiah, Mahalalel, and Perez, the son of Judah. From the descendants of Perez, 468 of the best men lived in Jerusalem. The other leader from Judah was Maaseiah, the son of Barak. His ancestors were Kolhozeh, Hazaiah, Adaiah, Joiarib, Zechariah, and Shelah, the son of Judah. The Benjamin Tribe. From the Benjamin tribe, 3 leaders settled in Jerusalem. The first was Salu, son of Meshullam, and the others were Gabbai and Salai. Salu's ancestors were Joed, Pedaiah, Koleah, Maaseiah, Ithiel, and Jesheah. Altogether, there were 928 men of the Benjamin tribe living in Jerusalem. Joel, son of Zichri, was their leader, and Judah, son of Hasenua, was second in command. Priests. Four priests settled in Jerusalem. The first was Jedaiah. He was the son of Joiarib and the uncle of Jachin. The second priest to settle there was Seraiah, son of Hilkiah. His ancestors were Meshullam, Zadok, Meraioth, and Ahitub, who had been a high priest. Altogether, there were 822 from his clan who served in the temple. The third priest to settle there was Adaiah, son of Jeroham. His ancestors were Pelaliah, Amzai, Zechariah, Pashur, and Melchijah. Altogether, there were 242 clan leaders among his relatives. The fourth priest to settle there was Amasai, son of Azarel. His ancestors were Azai, Meshillemoth, and Immer. Altogether, there were 128 brave warriors from their clans, and their leader was Zabdiel, son of Hagadolim. Levites. Several Levites settled in Jerusalem. First, there was Shemaiah, son of Hashab. His ancestors were Azrikam, Hashabiah, and Bunai. Next, there were Shabbathai and Jozabad, who were in charge of the work outside the temple. Then there was Mattaniah, son of Micah. His ancestors were Zabdi and Asaph. Mattaniah led the temple choir in the prayer of praise. Bakbukiah, who also settled in Jerusalem, was his assistant. Finally, there was Abda, son of Shemua. His grandfather was Galal, and his great-grandfather was Jeduthun. Altogether, 284 Levites settled in the holy city. Temple guards and others. 172 temple guards settled in Jerusalem. Their leaders were Akub and Talmon. The rest of the Israelites, including priests and Levites, lived on their own property in the other towns of Judah. But the temple workers lived in the section of Jerusalem known as Ophel, and the two men in charge of them were Ziha and Gishpa. Azai, son of Bani, was the leader of the Levites in Jerusalem. His grandfather was Hashabiah, his great-grandfather was Mattaniah, and his great-great-grandfather was Micah. He belonged to the Asaph clan that was in charge of the music for the temple services, though the daily choice of music and musicians was decided by royal decree of the Persian king. The people of Israel were represented at the Persian court by Pethahiah, son of Meshezabel from the Zerah clan of the Judah tribe. The people in the other towns and villages. Some of the people of Judah lived in the following towns near their farms: Kiriath Arba, Dibon, Jekabziel, Jeshua, Molada, Beth Pilet, Hazar Shul, Beersheba, Ziklag, Mekona, Enrimmon, Zora, Jarmuth, Zenoa, Adullam, Lachish, and Azekah. In fact, they settled the towns from Beersheba in the south to Hinnom Valley in the north. The people of Benjamin lived in the towns of Geba, Michmash, Aijah, Bethel, with its nearby villages, Anathoth, Nob, Ananiah, Hazor, Ramah, Gittaim, Hadid, Zeboim, Nebalat, Lod, and Ono, as well as in Craft Valley. Several groups of Levites from the territory of Judah were sent to live among the people of Benjamin. A list of priests and Levites. Chapter 12. Many priests and Levites had returned from Babylonia with Zerubbabel and Joshua as their leaders. Those priests were Seraiah, Jeremiah, Ezra, Amariah, Malak, Hattush, Shechaniah, Rehum, Meramoth, Iddo, Ginnathoi, Abijah, Midjamin, Meadiah, Bilga, Shemaiah, Joyarib, Jedeah, Salu, Amok, Hilkiah, and another Jedeah. These were the leading priests and their assistants during the time of Joshua. The Levites who returned were Jeshua, Binui, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah. They and their assistants were responsible for the songs of praise, while Bakbukiah and Anno, together with their assistants, were responsible for the choral responses. Descendants of Joshua the High Priest. Joshua was the father of Joachim, the grandfather of Eliashib, and the great-grandfather of Joiada. Joiada was the father of Jonathan and the grandfather of Jeduua. Leaders of the Priestly Clans. When Joachim was high priest, the following priests were leaders of their clans: Moreah of the Seraiah clan, Hananiah of Jeremiah, Meshullam of Ezra, Jehohanan of Amariah, Jonathan of Malukai, Joseph of Shebaniah, Adna of Harim, Helkai of Meraioth, Zechariah of Iddo, Meshullam of Ginnathon, Zichri of Abijah, Piltai of Moadiah, Shemua of Bilga, Jehonathan of Shemaiah, Mattanei of Joyarib, Azai of Jedeah, Kalei of Salei, Eber of Amok, Hashabiah of Hilkiah, and Nathanel of Jedeah. The Priestly and Levite Families. During the time of the high priests Eliashib, Joiada, Johanan, and Jeduua, and including the time that Darius was king of Persia, a record was kept of the heads of the Levite and priestly families. However, no official record was kept of the heads of the Levite clans after the death of Johanan, the grandson of Eliashib. Hashabiah, Sherebiah, Jeshua, son of Kadmiel, and their assistants organized two choirs of Levites to offer praises to God, just as King David, the man of God, had commanded. Mattaniah, Bakbukiah, Obadiah, Meshullam, Talmon, and Akkab were responsible for guarding the storerooms near the temple gates. All of these men lived during the time of Joachim, and during the time that I was governor, and Ezra, a teacher of the law of Moses, was priest. Nehemiah dedicates the city wall. When the city wall was dedicated, Levites from everywhere in Judah were invited to join in the celebration with songs of praise and with the music of cymbals, small harps, and other stringed instruments. The Levite singers lived in villages around Jerusalem. And so they came from there, as well as from the villages around Netophah, Beth Gilgal, Geba, and Asmaveth. The priests and Levites held special ceremonies to make themselves holy, and then they did the same for the rest of the people and for the gates and walls of the city. I brought the leaders of Judah to the top of the city wall and put them in charge of the two groups that were to march around on top of the wall, singing praises to God. One group marched to the right in the direction of Garbage Gate. Hoshea and half of the leaders followed them. Then came the priests Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, and Jeremiah, all of them blowing trumpets. Next, there was Zechariah of the Asaph clan, and his relatives Shemaiah, Azarel, Milalei, Gilalai, Maai, Nathanael, Judah, and Hanani. They played musical instruments like those that had been played by David, the man of God. And they marched behind Ezra, the teacher of the law. When they reached Fountain Gate, they climbed the steps to David's city and went past his palace, before stopping at the Water Gate near the eastern wall of the city. The second group of singers marched along the wall in the opposite direction, and I followed them, together with the other half of the leaders of Judah. We went past Oven Tower, Broad Wall, Ephraim Gate, Old Gate, Fish Gate, Hananel Tower, Hundred Tower, and on to Sheep Gate. Finally, we stopped at Gate of the Guard, where we stood in front of the temple with the other group, praising God. In the group with me were half of the leaders, as well as the priests Eliakim, Maaseiah, Miniamin, Micaiah, Elioenai, Zechariah, and Hananiah, who were blowing trumpets. Maaseiah, Shemaiah, Eleazar, Azai, Jehohanan, Malchijah, Elam, and Ezer also stood there, as Jezrehiah led the singers. God had made the people very happy, and so on that day they celebrated and offered many sacrifices. The women and children joined in the festivities, and joyful shouts could be heard far from the city of Jerusalem. Preparation for worship. On that same day, some leaders were appointed to be responsible for the safekeeping of gifts for the temple, and to be in charge of receiving the first part of the harvest and the 10% of the crops and livestock that was offered to God. These same leaders also collected the part of crops that the law of Moses taught was to be given to the Levites. Everyone was pleased with the work of the priests and Levites when they performed the ceremonies to make people acceptable to worship God. And the singers and the temple guards did their jobs according to the instructions given by David and his son Solomon. In fact, ever since the days of David and Asaph, there had been song leaders and songs of praise and worship. During the time that Zerubbabel and I were in charge, everyone in Israel gave what they were supposed to give for the daily needs of the singers and temple guards from the Levi tribe. Then the Levites would give the priests their share from what they had received. Foreigners are sent away. Chapter 13. On that day when the law of Moses was read aloud to everyone, it was discovered that Ammonites and Moabites were forbidden to belong to the people of God. This was because they had refused to give food and water to Israel and had hired Balaam to call down a curse on them. However, our God turned the curse into a blessing. Following the reading of the law of Moses, the people of Israel started sending away anyone who had any foreign ancestors. Nehemiah makes other changes. The priest Eliashib was a relative of Tobiah and had earlier been put in charge of the temple's storerooms. So he let Tobiah live in one of these rooms, where all kinds of things had been stored. The grain offerings, incense, utensils for the temple, as well as the tenth of the grain, wine, and olive oil that had been given for the use of the Levites, singers, and temple guards, and the gifts for the priests. This happened in the 32nd year that Artaxerxes ruled Babylonia. I was away from Jerusalem at the time because I was visiting him. Later, I received permission from the king to return to Jerusalem. Only then did I find out that Eliashib had done this terrible thing of letting Tobiah have a room in the temple. It upset me so much that I threw out every bit of Tobiah's furniture. Then I ordered the room to be cleaned, and the temple utensils, the grain offerings, and the incense to be brought back into the room. I also found out that the temple singers and several other Levites had returned to work on their farms because they had not been given their share of the harvest. I called the leaders together and angrily asked them, "Why is the temple neglected?" Then I told them to start doing their jobs. After this, everyone in Judah brought a tenth of their grain, wine, and olive oil to the temple storeroom. Finally, I appointed three men with good reputations to be in charge of what was brought there and to distribute it to the others. They were Shelemiah the priest, Zadok the teacher of the law, and Pedaiah the Levite. Their assistant was Hanan the son of Zachar and the grandson of Mattaniah. I pray that my God will remember these good things that I have done for his temple and for those who worship there. The Sabbath. I also noticed what the people of Judah were doing on the Sabbath. Not only were they trampling grapes to make wine, but they were harvesting their grain, grapes, figs, and other crops, and then loading these on donkeys to sell in Jerusalem. So I warned them not to sell food on the Sabbath. People who had moved to Jerusalem from the city of Tyre were bringing in fish and other things to sell there on the Sabbath. I got angry and said to the leaders of Judah, "This evil you are doing is an insult to the Sabbath. Didn't God punish us and this city because our ancestors did these very same things? And here you are about to make God furious again by disgracing the Sabbath." I ordered the gates of Jerusalem to be closed on the eve of the Sabbath, and not to be opened until after the Sabbath had ended. Then I put some of my own men in charge of the gates to make certain that nothing was brought in on the Sabbath. Once or twice, some merchants spent the night outside Jerusalem with their goods, but I warned them, "If you do this again, I'll have you arrested." From then on, they did not come on the Sabbath. I ordered the Levites to make themselves holy and to guard the gates on the Sabbath so that it would be kept holy. God is truly merciful, and I pray that he will treat me with kindness and bless me for doing this. Mixed marriages. I discovered that some Jewish men had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. About half of their children could not speak Hebrew. They spoke only the language of Ashdod or some other foreign language. So in my anger, I called down curses on those men. I had them beaten and even pulled out the hair of some of them. Then I made them promise. "In the name of God, we solemnly promise not to let our sons and daughters marry foreigners. God dearly loved King Solomon of Israel and made him the greatest king on earth, but Solomon's foreign wives led him into sin. So we will obey you and not rebel against our God by marrying foreign women." Jehoiada, the son of the high priest Eliashib, had a son who had married a daughter of Sanballat from Horon, and I forced his son to leave. I pray that God will punish them for breaking their priestly vows and disgracing the Levite tribe. Then I made sure that the people were free from every foreign influence, and I assigned duties for the priests and Levites. I also arranged for the people to bring firewood to the altar each day, and for them to bring the first part of their harvest to the temple. I pray that God will bless me for the good I have done.
This ends Nehemiah, narrated by Richard M. Davidson. And now, Esther, narrated by Suzanne Torin.
Esther. About this book. The story of Esther takes place in the city of Susa, in the winter palace of the Persian king. After King Xerxes divorced his queen, he chose a young Jewish woman named Esther as his new queen. She was an orphan, but had been adopted and cared for by her cousin, Mordecai, who was given a job as a palace official. Mordecai warned her not to tell anyone that she was a Jew, and she obeyed. The king's highest official was a man named Haman. He hated the Jews, and he tricked the king into giving permission to have them all killed. The rest of the book tells how Esther risked her own life to save the lives of her people. Afterward, Mordecai and Esther wrote a letter telling all Jews to celebrate the festival of Purim every year to remember how the nation was saved. Queen Vashti disobeys King Xerxes. Chapter 1. King Xerxes of Persia lived in his capital city of Susa and ruled 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. During the third year of his rule, Xerxes gave a big dinner for all his officials and officers. The governors and leaders of the provinces were also invited, and even the commanders of the Persian and Median armies came. For 180 days he showed off his wealth and spent a lot of money to impress his guests with the greatness of his kingdom. King Xerxes soon gave another dinner and invited everyone in the city of Susa, no matter who they were. The eating and drinking lasted 7 days in the beautiful palace gardens. The area was decorated with blue and white cotton curtains tied back with purple linen cords that ran through silver rings fastened to marble columns. Couches of gold and silver rested on pavement that had all kinds of designs made from costly, bright-colored stones and marble and mother-of-pearl. The guests drank from gold cups, and each cup had a different design. The king was generous and said to them, "Drink all you want." Then he told his servants, "Keep their cups full." While the men were enjoying themselves, Queen Vashti gave the women a big dinner inside the royal palace. By the 7th day, King Xerxes was feeling happy because of so much wine, and he asked his 7 personal servants, Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zithar, and Carcass, to bring Queen Vashti to him. The king wanted her to wear her crown and let his people and his officials see how beautiful she was. The king's servants told Queen Vashti what he had said, but she refused to go to him, and this made him terribly angry. The king called in the 7 highest officials of Persia and Media. They were Karshana, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marcena, and Memucan. These men were very wise and understood all the laws and customs of the country, and the king always asked them what they thought about such matters. The king said to them, "Queen Vashti refused to come to me when I sent my servants for her. What does the law say I should do about that?" Then Memucan told the king and the officials, "Your Majesty, Queen Vashti has not only embarrassed you, but she has insulted your officials and everyone else in all the provinces. The women in the kingdom will hear about this, and they will refuse to respect their husbands. They will say, 'If Queen Vashti doesn't obey her husband, why should we?' Before this day is over, the wives of the officials of Persia and Media will find out what Queen Vashti has done, and they will refuse to obey their husbands. They won't respect their husbands, and their husbands will be angry with them. Your Majesty, if you agree, you should write for the Medes and Persians a law that can never be changed. This law would keep Queen Vashti from ever seeing you again. Then you could let someone who respects you be queen in her place. When the women in your kingdom hear about this new law, they will respect their husbands, no matter if they are rich or poor." King Xerxes and his officials liked what Memucan had said, and he sent letters to all of his provinces. Each letter was written in the language of the province to which it was sent, and it said that husbands should have complete control over their wives and children. Esther becomes queen. Chapter 2. After a while, King Xerxes got over being angry, but he kept thinking about what Vashti had done and the law that he had written because of her. Then the king's personal servants said, "Your Majesty, a search must be made to find you some beautiful young women. You can select officers in every province to bring them to the place where you keep your wives in the capital city of Susa. Put your servant Hegai in charge of them, since that is his job. He can see to it that they are given the proper beauty treatments. Then let the young woman who pleases you most take Vashti's place as queen." King Xerxes liked these suggestions, and he followed them. At this time, a Jew named Mordecai was living in Susa. His father was Jair, and his grandfather, Shimei, was the son of Kish from the tribe of Benjamin. Kish was one of the people that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem when he took King Jeconiah of Judah to Babylonia. Mordecai had a very beautiful cousin named Esther, whose Hebrew name was Hadassah. He had raised her as his own daughter after her father and mother died. When the king ordered the search for beautiful women, many were taken to the king's palace in Susa, and Esther was one of them. Hegai was put in charge of all the women, and from the first day, Esther was his favorite. He began her beauty treatments at once. He also gave her plenty of food and 7 special maids from the king's palace, and they had the best rooms. Mordecai had warned Esther not to tell anyone that she was a Jew, and she obeyed him. He was anxious to see how Esther was getting along and to learn what had happened to her. So each day he would walk back and forth in front of the court where the women lived. The young women were given beauty treatments for 1 whole year. The first 6 months, their skin was rubbed with olive oil and myrrh, and the last 6 months, it was treated with perfumes and cosmetics. Then each of them spent the night alone with King Xerxes. When a young woman went to the king, she could wear whatever clothes or jewelry she chose from the women's living quarters. In the evening, she would go to the king, and the following morning she would go to the place where his wives stayed after being with him. There, a man named Sheashgaz was in charge of the king's wives. Only the ones the king wanted and asked for by name could go back to the king. Xerxes had been king for 7 years when Esther's turn came to go to him during Tebeth, the 10th month of the year. Everyone liked Esther. The king's personal servant, Hegai, was in charge of the women, and Esther trusted Hegai and asked him what she ought to take with her. Xerxes liked Esther more than he did any of the other young women. None of them pleased him as much as she did, and right away he fell in love with her and crowned her queen in place of Vashti. In honor of Esther, he gave a big dinner for his leaders and officials. Then he declared a holiday everywhere in his kingdom and gave expensive gifts. Mordecai saves the king's life. When the young women were brought together again, Esther's cousin Mordecai had become a palace official. He had told Esther never to tell anyone that she was a Jew, and she obeyed him, just as she had always done. Bigthana and Teresh were the 2 men who guarded King Xerxes' rooms. But they got angry with the king and decided to kill him. Mordecai found out about their plans and asked Queen Esther to tell the king what he had found out. King Xerxes learned that Mordecai's report was true, and he had the 2 men hanged. Then the king had all of this written down in his record book as he watched. Haman plans to destroy the Jews. Chapter 3. Later, King Xerxes promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, to the highest position in his kingdom. Haman was a descendant of Agag, and the king had given orders for his officials at the royal gate to honor Haman by kneeling down to him. All of them obeyed, except Mordecai. When the other officials asked Mordecai why he disobeyed the king's command, he said, "Because I am a Jew." They spoke to him for several days about kneeling down, but he still refused to obey. Finally, they reported this to Haman to find out if he would let Mordecai get away with it. Haman was furious to learn that Mordecai refused to kneel down and honor him. And when he found out that Mordecai was a Jew, he knew that killing only Mordecai was not enough. Every Jew in the whole kingdom had to be killed. It was now the 12th year of the rule of King Xerxes. During Nisan, the first month of the year, Haman said, "Find out the best time for me to do this." The time chosen was Adar, the 12th month. Then Haman went to the king and said, "Your Majesty, there are some people who live all over your kingdom and won't have a thing to do with anyone else. They have customs that are different from everyone else's, and they refuse to obey your laws. We would be better off to get rid of them. Why not give orders for all of them to be killed? I can promise that you will get tons of silver for your treasury." The king handed his official ring to Haman, who hated the Jews, and the king told him, "Do what you want with those people. You can keep their money." On the 13th day of Nisan, Haman called in the king's secretaries and ordered them to write letters in every language used in the kingdom. The letters were written in the name of the king and sealed by using the king's own ring. At once they were sent to the king's highest officials, the governors of each province, and the leaders of the different nations in the kingdom of Xerxes. The letters were taken by messengers to every part of the kingdom, and this is what was said in the letters. On the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month, all Jewish men, women, and children are to be killed, and their property is to be taken. King Xerxes gave orders for these letters to be posted where they could be seen by everyone all over the kingdom. The king's command was obeyed, and one of the letters was read aloud to the people in the walled city of Susa. Then the king and Haman sat down to drink together, but no one in the city could figure out what was going on. Mordecai asks for Esther's help. Chapter 4. When Mordecai heard about the letter, he tore his clothes in sorrow and put on sackcloth. Then he covered his head with ashes and went through the city crying and weeping. But he could go only as far as the palace gate, because no one wearing sackcloth was allowed inside the palace. In every province where the king's orders were read, the Jews cried and mourned, and they went without eating. Many of them even put on sackcloth and sat in ashes. When Esther's servant girls and her other servants told her what Mordecai was doing, she became very upset and sent Mordecai some clothes to wear in place of the sackcloth, but he refused to take them. Esther had a servant named Hathach, who had been given to her by the king. So she called him in and said, "Find out what's wrong with Mordecai and why he's acting this way." Hathach went to Mordecai in the city square in front of the palace gate, and Mordecai told him everything that had happened. He also told him how much money Haman had promised to add to the king's treasury if all the Jews were killed. Mordecai gave Hathach a copy of the orders for the murder of the Jews and told him that these had been read in Susa. He said, "Show this to Esther and explain what it means. Ask her to go to the king and beg him to have pity on her people, the Jews." Hathach went back to Esther and told her what Mordecai had said. She answered, "Tell Mordecai there is a law about going in to see the king, and all his officials and his people know about this law. Anyone who goes in to see the king without being invited by him will be put to death. The only way that anyone can be saved is for the king to hold out the gold scepter to that person. And it's been 30 days since he has asked for me." When Mordecai was told what Esther had said, he sent back this reply, "Don't think that you will escape being killed with the rest of the Jews just because you live in the king's palace. If you don't speak up now, we will somehow get help, but you and your family will be killed. It could be that you were made queen for a time like this." Esther sent a message to Mordecai saying, "Bring together all the Jews in Susa and tell them to go without eating for my sake. Don't eat or drink for 3 days and nights. My servant girls and I will do the same. Then I will go in to see the king, even if it means I must die." Mordecai did everything Esther told him to do. Esther invites the king and Haman to a dinner. Chapter 5. 3 days later, Esther dressed in her royal robes and went to the inner court of the palace in front of the throne. The king was sitting there facing the open doorway. He was happy to see Esther, and he held out the gold scepter to her. When Esther came up and touched the tip of the scepter, the king said, "Esther, what brings you here? Just ask, and I will give you as much as half of my kingdom." Esther answered, "Your Majesty, please come with Haman to a dinner I will prepare for you later today." The king said to his servants, "Hurry and get Haman so we can accept Esther's invitation." The king and Haman went to Esther's dinner, and while they were drinking wine, the king asked her, "What can I do for you? Just ask, and I will give you as much as half of my kingdom." Esther replied, "Your Majesty, if you really care for me and are willing to do what I want, please come again tomorrow with Haman to the dinner I will prepare for you. At that time, I will answer Your Majesty's question." Haman plans to kill Mordecai. Haman was feeling great as he left, but when he saw Mordecai at the palace gate, he noticed that Mordecai did not stand up or show him any respect. This made Haman really angry, but he did not say a thing. When Haman got home, he called together his friends and his wife, Zeresh, and started bragging about his great wealth and all his sons. He told them the many ways that the king had honored him and how all the other officials and leaders had to respect him. Haman added, "That's not all. Besides the king himself, I'm the only person Queen Esther invited for dinner. She has also invited the king and me to dinner tomorrow. But none of this makes me happy as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the palace gate." Haman's wife and friends said to him, "Have a tower built about 75 feet high, and tomorrow morning ask the king to hang Mordecai there. Then later, you can have dinner with the king and enjoy yourself." This seemed like a good idea to Haman, and he had the tower built. The king honors Mordecai. Chapter 6. That night, the king could not sleep, and he had a servant read him the records of what had happened since he had been king. When the servant read how Mordecai had kept Bigthana and Teresh from killing the king asked, "What has been done to reward Mordecai for this?" "Nothing, Your Majesty," the king's servants replied. About this time, Haman came in to ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on the tower he had built. The king saw him and asked, "Who is that man waiting in front of the throne room?" The king's servants answered, "Your Majesty, it is Haman." "Have him come in," the king commanded. When Haman entered the room, the king asked him, "What should I do for a man I want to honor?" Haman was sure that he was the one the king wanted to honor, so he replied, "Your Majesty, if you wish to honor a man, have someone bring him one of your own robes and one of your own horses with a fancy headdress. Have one of your highest officials place your robe on this man and lead him through the streets on your horse, while someone shouts, 'This is how the king honors a man.'" The king replied, "Hurry and do just what you have said. Don't forget a thing. Get the robe and the horse for Mordecai the Jew, who is on duty at the palace gate." Haman got the king's robe and put it on Mordecai. He led him through the city on the horse and shouted as he went, "This is how the king honors a man." Afterwards, Mordecai returned to his duties at the palace gate, and Haman hurried home, hiding his face in shame. Haman told his wife and friends what had happened. Then his wife and his advisers said, "If Mordecai is a Jew, this is just the beginning of your troubles. You will end up a ruined man." They were still talking when the king's servants came and quickly took Haman to the dinner that Esther had prepared. Haman is punished. Chapter 7. The king and Haman were dining with Esther and drinking wine during the second dinner, when the king again said, "Esther, what can I do for you? Just ask, and I will give you as much as half of my kingdom." Esther answered, "Your Majesty, if you really care for me and are willing to help, you can save me and my people. That's what I really want, because a reward has been promised to anyone who kills my people. Your Majesty, if we were merely going to be sold as slaves, I would not have bothered you." "Who would dare to do such a thing?" the king asked. Esther replied, "That evil Haman is the one out to get us." Haman was terrified as he looked at the king and the queen. The king was so angry that he got up, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. Haman realized that the king had already decided what to do with him, and he stayed and begged Esther to save his life. Just as the king came back into the room, Haman got down on his knees beside Esther, who was lying on the couch. The king shouted, "Now you're even trying to rape my queen here in my own palace!" As soon as the king said this, his servants covered Haman's head. Then Harbona, one of the king's personal servants, said, "Your Majesty, Haman built a tower 75 feet high beside his house so he could hang Mordecai on it. And Mordecai is the very one who spoke up and saved your life." "Hang Haman from his own tower," the king commanded. Right away, Haman was hanged on the tower he had built to hang Mordecai. And the king calmed down. A happy ending for the Jews. Chapter 8. Before the end of the day, King Xerxes gave Esther everything that had belonged to Haman, the enemy of the Jews. Esther told the king that Mordecai was her cousin. So the king made Mordecai one of his highest officials and gave him the royal ring that Haman had worn. Then Esther put Mordecai in charge of Haman's property. Once again, Esther went to speak to the king. This time she fell down at his feet, crying and begging, "Please stop Haman's evil plan to have the Jews killed." King Xerxes held out the golden scepter to Esther, and she got up and said, "Your Majesty, I know that you will do the right thing and that you really love me. Please stop what Haman has planned. He has already sent letters demanding that the Jews in all your provinces be killed, and I can't bear to see my people and my own relatives destroyed." King Xerxes then said to Esther and Mordecai, "I have already ordered Haman to be hanged and his house given to Esther because of his evil plans to kill the Jews. I now give you permission to make a law that will save the lives of your people. You may use my ring to seal the law, so that it can never be changed." On the 23rd day of Sivan, the third month, the king's secretaries wrote the law. They obeyed Mordecai and wrote to the Jews, the rulers, the governors, and the officials of all 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. The letters were written in every language used in the kingdom, including the Jewish language. They were written in the name of King Xerxes and sealed with his ring. Then they were taken by messengers who rode the king's finest and fastest horses. In these letters, the king said, "On the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month, the Jews in every city and province will be allowed to get together and defend themselves. They may destroy any army that attacks them, and they may kill all of their enemies, including women and children. They may also take everything that belongs to their enemies. A copy of this law is to be posted in every province and read by everyone. Then the king ordered his messengers to take their fastest horses and deliver the law as quickly as possible to every province. When Mordecai left, he was wearing clothes fit for a king. He wore blue and white robes, a large gold crown, and a cape made of fine linen and purple cloth. After the law was announced in Susa, everyone shouted and cheered, and the Jews were no longer afraid. In fact, they were very happy and felt that they had won a victory. In every province and city where the law was sent, the Jews had parties and celebrated. Many of the people in the provinces accepted the Jewish religion because they were now afraid of the Jews. The Jews destroy their enemies. Chapter 9. The first law that the king had made was to be followed on the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month. This was the very day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to do away with them. But the Jews turned things around, and in the cities of every province they came together to attack their enemies. Everyone was afraid of the Jews, and no one could do anything to oppose them. The leaders of the provinces, the rulers, the governors, and the court officials, were afraid of Mordecai and took sides with the Jews. Everyone in the provinces knew that the king had promoted him and had given him a lot of power. The Jews took their swords and did away with their enemies without showing any mercy. They killed 500 people in Susa, but they did not take anything that belonged to the ones they killed. Haman had been one of the worst enemies of the Jews, and 10 of his sons were among those who were killed. Their names were Parshandatha, Dalphon, Aspatha, Poretha, Adalia, Aridatha, Parmashta, Arisai, Aridai, and Vazatha. Later that day, someone told the king how